break the chains. Now, I'm really pleased to welcome to the show two people who, I got to tell you, I went to the opening of this play. As everybody knows, I really love theater when I come onto the show, right? Even off the show. But I do a lot of interviews with people in theater around the show. And I went, and it was at the Fountain Theater, and the play was called Runaway Home, and it was a play by Jeremy Camps, and it's having its world premiere at the Fountain Theater, and it was just a mind blower. I mean, it was one of these plays where you're at the end of it, you're like, no, I'm not leaving my seat until something more comes out. I was really pleased. I just talked about it with people endlessly about it. So I wanted two of the actors in the show are here with me today. All right. And I want to welcome Karen Molina White.
Thank you. It's good to be here, Michael.
Yeah. Good to have you. And Camille Spearlin.
Yes. Hi.
There you go. Hi.
Thank you for having us.
Okay. Now you got to sit over there and I want to see your hands on the table.
Nobody it's trusts just, me.
You know what? I loved you in that. And I thought, it was just sort of, you were really incredible, and we'll talk about this, but I want to start with you first, Molina.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell us what the play is about.
The play, it's a post-Katrina play. It takes place 3 years after the hurricane, and it Lower Ninth Ward, so where people got hit the most, and it's told through the story of a 14-year-old girl, and at the center of the story is her relationship with her mom, who went through the hurricane and lost her grandmother. But it's also about the community that they have to come back to after once being displaced.
And can you add to that?
We're all just looking for a home. Mm-hmm. I'm just another girl running. Everything that you just said, and also that we need to leave the past where the past is and just keep pushing forward and making our new truth.
But actually, you know, one thing, and this is for both of you to talk about, because, you know, I tell you, I think that when you said that leave the past where it is, you know, and Camille, your character doesn't so much leave the past where it is, but actually struggles to forge a whole new future based on what has been, what has happened, what has gone on. And I thought, you know, the way you carry this out, and I have to tell people, you play, how old is that? Is the young woman you play?
She's 14 and a half.
She's 14 and a half.
14.
Yeah. You see that? Yeah, my kid used to talk about it. You know, no, man, he turned 12 and it was like a month after his birthday. I'm almost 13, man. You can't control me, you know. I can be free at 13, right? It's sort of, you know, but you play this young woman and you play it with such vigor. I mean, it's really, and you really become this person, and in every way. And there's a way that you see, you know, I'll just say something about the character of your character, which is, you know, in a lot of ways, you're up against a world that you just don't accept. You don't understand and you don't accept. And you're not going to let it crush you. And so you got a big mouth and you're not afraid to use it. But you also use it oftentimes for some of the most remarkable. And when I ask you about this, you spit a lot of rhymes when you're there. And some of the most remarkable ones in terms, and I know it comes from the person that wrote the play, but your role in actually doing that, because I imagine that isn't so different from, I mean, you're part of that generation where that actually is the culture, the art that actually has meant a lot to, not to everybody, but has meant a lot to people who are growing up in that generation, that art. And I thought the way you captured a lot of the essence of the story in the rhymes was just incredible.
Thank you. Couldn't have done it without Shirley Joe and Jeremy Camps leading me. It was a lot.
Yeah. Well, did you you got to go a little longer than that. That's a nice shirt you have on. I have a shirt that has it on.
Thank you.
Well, think about, because I'm going to come back to you on this, because your character is sort of a pivotal point, and at the same time, it's now I should call you Karen, not Molina, right?
Karen Molina.
Karen Molina. Oh, you're going to make me say two names.
No,
now.
You can say either one. Either one works.
Okay. All right, Mrs. White.
There you
no,
go.
No. All right, Karen Molina. Your character actually is someone who, you know, it's interesting because you have all this craziness around you, but you're steady on until you're confronted with the craziness is there until somebody's going to have to do something. Let's talk about your character, what you found in that.
Yeah, my character is kind of like the unofficial mayor of the Lower Ninth Ward, but she represents the voice of the poor people the people who get looked over, the people who are taken care of last. She's the one who stayed in the community to try to protect the homes of her community. She represents the voice of those who've gotten taken advantage of, whether it's claims insurance people, whether it's the government, FEMA, you know, as we see and continue to see with, you know, all the hurricane and tragedies, you know, how people prey on the poor and that motivation of greed. You know, we see in Sandy Hook all of the claims adjusters, you know, taking advantage of people and the fine line and not giving them what they, you know, flood insurance and all these kinds of things. And so she's one who's trying to hold on to her community, to preserve it and to keep it for the people who had lived their lives there, generations of generations, as opposed to the people who want to come in and remove the houses and take advantage of it and, you know, start to rebuild and, you know, more, also like gentrification, you know. A lot of black homes, black communities are being lost to these kinds of things, and so she's the voice of the people.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
And actually, that is something that really is stands in, and it may be in the background for a long time, but it mm-hmm. actually, as the play goes on, it poses itself. And I was thinking about that because I was reading some about the author of the play, and I had gone to New Orleans right after, pretty soon after mm-hmm. Katrina, and mm-hmm. was down there for a couple weeks, and I went for the station, and I was recording interviews with people and stuff, And it was really, it was very, very heavy because what you saw, and having gone to New Orleans many times mm-hmm. in my youth and then mm-hmm. throughout later on, and, you know, going to visit people or hang out or do whatever, mm-hmm. it was something that you saw that when you went down there, it wasn't just that the storm was so bad, but that, and it wasn't just that people lost their homes, bad as that was. Mm-hmm. It was actually, there was a real fight. Yeah. To almost lose the people. I mean, it was to push the people out. I mean, I went to Texas after spending a couple weeks in New Orleans, and I went to Texas, and I saw these tens of thousands of people mm-hmm. who had been driven from New Orleans,
right?
Living, and like this one woman was living with somebody who just went down. She saw this woman saw the people in the stadium there in Texas in Houston, and she went down and she just grabbed a bunch of people and she said, "Come back to my house." And mm. so she brought this woman with her, all of her entire family, which was about 12 people. Mm. And as she's sitting there, the woman said that her mother had sent her to this stadium to get people, and her mother was sitting there, and her mother said, and her mother must have been like, I mean, she was really old. She was really old. Mm. I mean, she might have been close to 100. Mm. And she just said, "The stories of when they kept us in chains mm. and sold us like we were cattle never left my mind mm. when I was seeing what was happening." Yeah. And that's a big part of what's being posed in the play itself, you know, yeah. when you look at that. And that's why I thought that Break the Chains was actually, you know, important in this,
right.
But it's also something that we have to deal with, that people have to recognize that that's actually what was going on. There is this genocidal swing mm-hmm. to things.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of PTSD, you know. I mean, people who've been displaced, a lot of people from after Katrina, they were put on planes. They didn't even know where they were going. You know, mm-hmm. you look at the movie When the Levees Broke and just hear all the personal testimonies and stories of these people just really suffer. A lot of people still couldn't come back, couldn't afford to come back and rebuild their houses and, you know, are still in Houston or, you know, other places. A lot came out here to L.A. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have to deal with rebuilding and getting assistance. And, you know, so we're going to see what's going to happen to the people of Puerto Rico, you know, mm-hmm. just mm-hmm. that madness there. So. Yeah, it's long lasting. You never forget it. And I think this little girl in this story, at this young age, what she goes through and how that affects her. And I think that's the heart of the story too. The children are mm-hmm. affected.
Yeah,
by
exactly,
it.
Exactly. Now I want to thank you for for pointing the finger in that direction.
Yes.
Hi.
Hey.
What do you think about this?
I definitely think Holly, especially, she's not only been through a lot, but she has to live this for the rest of her life. This will never be erased from her mind. And just the fact that having to go that deep into this character was very hard. Not only am I just trying to bring to life a character, but also all the children of Katrina who went through this, and watching the documentary Children in the Storm, and how they were just, I didn't know how to swim. I didn't know what was going to happen to my mom. I was put on a boat. I was put on the freeway. It was tough, and the fact that this little girl uses her diary to get through everything, and not only does she not have her diary, she has to keep it in her head and constantly go through those thoughts. It's a lot. It's PTSD. But it's also therapeutic. She's getting through it, and finally she breaks free.
And with her, what you see, because you see that the playwright has painted a character who, and I've seen this too. I mean, I met a guy down there who had, he was on a bridge. He was on one of the bridges, and he had diabetes, and he got real sick, and he passed out, and people tried to get him to a hospital. Then the cops came, and they took him to the hospital. But then when he woke up, his entire family was spread to the wind. Mm. He had no way. His cell phone didn't work. He didn't have it anymore, something like that. His family didn't have cell phones anymore. They had no idea. How do you find yourself? How do you find your family?
Right.
And in a way, I thought that was one of the things, Camille, that your character was actually really trying to struggle with. Because in a certain sense, like, your character actually was there and was trying to pull stuff together. But you were not.
No.
And then you come into a whole different life where you go from being this young woman who won a spelling bee.
Second place.
Okay, but had that trophy.
Yes.
And had that in your head. And it really meant something to you, too. You were then washed away. That character got washed away a little bit. Mm-hmm. And you had to deal with a whole new set of reality, you know, which was actually, I found it very heavy. And the way you walked through that, maintaining that sort of that innocence and sort of like, I can do anything of young people. In the best of circumstances, but you maintain that, and actually there was always that, no matter how hard, and you were very good at presenting it as, you're really hard, but then your heart is there. Mm. Even in the trickery you play on people, I was like, you can't, no, he's my age, you can't treat him like that. But it was heavy, and that must have been a heavy thing to do, to try and actually maintain that combination of the innocence of childhood and the eagerness to be out in the world. At the same time, you're in a world that has nothing for you.
Right.
You know, which was really, and that's something people are going through a lot today.
Yes, and I feel that with Kali, too, the guidance of her grandmother really, really stuck with her. And I feel, by the grace of God, that everybody who's going through Hurricane Harvey and everything, and that they can find that voice, they can find something and really, really pull through. So...
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me something, because you did a lot of rhyming. Did you actually, do you do that outside of?
Yes, yeah? I do, yes.
Mm-hmm. Could you do something for people now from the show?
From the show, yes.
Okay, why don't you do that?
Of course. Dear Diary, I've stolen, I've cussed, yeah, I have missed the bus. Look, I've scratched girls' skin so deep that they bleed. I refuse to let my teachers teach me how to read. I had to learn for myself. I'm a truant and a juvie. I make out with boys in backs of movies. I'm a flirt gone too far, having a baby as a teen. But did you know? I'm truly a queen. I used to rule over these swamps and hills and work this Delta land. Picking cotton, pouring tea, wore both shackles on my ankle and the same time, a crown made of gold. I am the slave and the goddess. The greatest stories never told.
Yeah. Brought to you by 14-year-old.
There you go. There you go. See, folks, that's one reason why you got to go see this, because it's really, that's the beauty of it. Now, moving back to you, madam. Because you actually, in a certain sense, it is true that you play that role that you're really frustrated. And I have to admit, you're surrounded by a lot of frustrating people that you have to rely on to a certain extent. But you're also, you're someone who is like, now, your character didn't leave the Ninth Ward, right?
Right.
And stayed there and kind of was the sort of the guard planted at the gate kind of thing.
Absolutely.
And as you were saying earlier, that you had to face, you know, your character had to face a lot of the stuff of like people coming in, the people trying to grab the land, grab the houses, people not being able to come back. Mm-hmm. And I thought that the way you actually put that was, you know, in the way you carried that out, because your character always maintained authority, but a softness too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And especially when it was for your friend, you know, when it was Kali's mom, and she was messed up for about 12 people, folks. She had gone through a lot. In the initial part of the play, you just think she's like, damn, she's mean. Mm-hmm. You know, she's all about herself. That's all she. But then as her character unfolds, you begin to understand all the things that happened to her,
right,
and what brought her there. But you knew that, and your character actually played a really important role in terms of the heartbeat, in a way, the heartbeat of the whole play. It was kind of it was. I really enjoyed that. I thought you did a really good job at it, but I wonder how you felt about that,
Thank
too.
Thank you. I felt good about it. I really liked the character. Really resonated with her. Her name is Shauna. And I think she's, you know, she's, like you said, she's the heart. She's the rock of the community. And she was one who stayed, you know, whether she had to live in her trailer for however how long, or, you know, whether her house was, you know, just okay enough for her to live in. But, you know, we see all kinds of people. And, yes, Kali's mother, Eunice, she had to leave her mother there, right? They were in a boat. The mother dies in a boat. And they have to push the mother's dead body out of the boat in order to let some more people who are stranded on the roof into. So that just, you know, that's what's at, you know, the bottom of her. You know, she can't wrestle with that. You know, there was no body to bury. She never knew what happened to that body. And so, you know, this is the pain that she goes through. And she never really had a relationship with a daughter. So now she has to forge one. They have to create, you know, a new relationship with them. The mother was always there, you know, binding them. But now the mother's gone. And so at the end of the play, you know, New Orleans and their funerals, you know, they have this joyous funeral. They do a second line. They play music. And finally, at the end of the play, you know, these three women, they get to dance and they get to, you know, bury their mother properly, you know, her neighbor, the oldest, you know, neighbor in the community. So it's full of laughter in the play. It's a lot of heart. It speaks to a lot of things that's happening, so it's very topical. But you get to see all kinds of characters. You get to see the oldest male in the community, and, you know, and how important he is. And you get to see, you know, there's a white guy, brilliantly played by Brian Tichenor, comes in, and, you know, he's one of those you know, people that come in, he comes in from Michigan, he wants to help. Very empathetic, you know, and so those people are there, and, you know, you get to see the relationship of him to the being an outsider to the community. So Jeremy has just done a really great job. Shirley Jo Finney just putting all together under her direction and vision. And we're just happy to be a part of this new play, this journey. So it's been a treat.
Yeah, and I just have to say this. I don't want you to get upset, all right, Camille, because your character, that guy that came in from Michigan or whatever it was, got his butt kicked, metaphorically, by a 14-year-old.
Right.
Who basically just put him on the sidelines. Yeah. But it was really beautifully done. And I have to tell you, I think everyone should go see this play. It's a really powerful play. Both of you folks are really, really great in it.
Thank you.
I really, you know, I was thinking, God, we should just get the whole cast if we could, because the man that plays the old man, really
Jairus Poindexter, yeah. Armando Del Rey, he's the voice of the Latino immigrant. Yeah. You know, a lot of Latinos were bused there to help rebuild these homes. You know, so they're in that community as well. Jeremy did a great job of having so many points of view.
That's right. And now we have to wrap this up because they're going to start waving, throwing rocks at the window if we don't get out of here. Okay. So we've been talking with actors Camille Spearlin and Karen Molina White from Runaway Home, and it's a play by Jeffrey Camps, and it's currently having its world premiere at the Fountain Theater in Los Angeles, and it's running, right? And you can find out the Fountain Theater, the address of the Fountain Theater. I don't have the address.
5060 Fountain Avenue.
There you go. You would think I go there so often. I thought I was living there. I thought they were going to give me a room there for a while, okay? Hey, it's right here, 5060 Fountain Avenue, and it's playing Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., and Mondays at 8 p.m., and on Mondays, it's pay what you can nights, all right? And pay what you feel obliged to pay. All right, I want to thank both of you guys for joining us today. Right? It's been really incredibly nice talking with you, and a really good experience seeing it. And we're going out now with a version of the Clash song, Guns of Brixton. And tune in next week, and this is Michael Slate, and I'm saying goodbye, and I want to thank all my guests and my assistant producer, Henry Carson, my board op, Kiana Williams, my assistant producer is Henry Carson, my production assistant is